Black mold, claustrophobic crawl spaces, crumbling foundations. Today, some of the scariest things that can happen to your home. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, household horror with our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally. We'll talk about the worst things that can happen to your house and what you can do to prevent catastrophe. Bill will also answer your questions about the home improvement projects or pending catastrophes on your list. Call us 866-780-9100 or talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Join the conversation after the news.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Luther College, offering more than 60 areas of study, including the new data science and neuroscience majors, dedicated to preparing students for success in a changing world.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, household horror, the stuff that's really hard and really expensive to fix, like black mold, crumbling foundations, and other terrifying household disasters. Our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally, is here to help us ward off catastrophe. Hello, Bill.
Good morning, Charity. Happy Halloween.
Well, happy Halloween to you, too. And I asked you what the scariest things are that can happen to your house, and your first response was moisture.
Right. Right.
Just, there's plenty of moisture around. What are we talking about?
Well, you know, when we go back and look at houses that I'm going to say we, because I'm included, when we did, housing in the 70s and 80s and 90s, and even now, it seems like our biggest problems are because we didn't understand how to keep moisture out of our walls and having too much moisture in certain rooms. How do we get rid of it? And you add a bunch of fans, but nobody asked, well, where does the moisture go? It's just, hey, there's that fan running, it's gone out of this room. And when we go back and look at especially attics and basements, I'll just start off, in the basements, we thought that, you dig down in the ground and of course, there's always a little bit of water, especially in Iowa, down in the water in the hole, throw a little gravel down there, pour your footings and put this magic tile around the outside of your foundation and it would keep your basement dry. We didn't understand how moisture comes up through concrete, and they call that capillary action, where it comes up through the footings and into the walls. And we would insulate the basements to keep them warm, especially when we had our high energy costs, when we had the energy scares and the lines and the whole bit. We just threw insulation up and didn't understand that when we tried to keep the warm air inside, say, the basement, that we kept the basement walls cold, and then we had condensation and probably one of the worst cases that I heard of. I mean, I've pulled insulation out of basements before, and the walls are covered with mold. Of course, then you have to bring in somebody to take care of it. But a friend of mine up in the Twin Cities, the worst case that he had run into, where they had not kept the moisture out because they didn't waterproof correctly on the outside. Water was coming down towards the house instead of shedding away. He walked in the basement and they said, geez, there's a terrible smell, and they couldn't figure it out and they didn't see any issues. And he just walked over and he kicked the wall about a foot up from the floor and out came all these night crawlers that were in varying degrees of decomposition, And he said it was so wet in there that the night crawlers said, and I don't know where they came from, and he didn't either. He said, all I can tell you is they came out of that wall when I kicked it.
Wow.
And because of it was a perfect, like a bus bedding, something you raise your night crawlers and keep them in. It was that wet when it was coming up through the ground, through the footings, and then into the insulation. And I go to new housing projects and when I'm consulting and stuff, and I see us doing the same doggone thing. And I just fear that 10 years down the road, we're going to have the same issues. We're trying to show people that you have to do research on water management. And it's, the thing is, when things get wet, especially wood expands. And then when it dries, it contracts. I mean, expand, and natural wood does. But a lot of the products that we've made, man-made products, when they get wet, they expand. Well, when they dry, now they're just plain rotten. and we lose our strength in our building. So if everybody would just understand moisture management, you know, do a lot of research on that, because it's something that is almost always hidden. And when people maybe have some respiratory issues, especially if they spend a lot of time in their basements and they don't see mold, they don't sometimes even really get a hint of smell of it because they're burning candles or they're doing those Febreze things, right, or whatever, covering up, stop doing it for a little bit and see if you can, you know, even get a hint, because that's probably your best indicator. It's not all these tests and everything. As if you just can feel the humidity or you can smell a little bit of that mildew.
In some cases, we've been our own worst enemies because we've tightened up our homes without thinking about the moisture.
We have. And that's it. You know, that's why building science is such a hot topic. It has been for about the last 10 years. You really can't build a house too tight. You just have to ventilate it correctly. And that's the time-worn phrase is build tight, ventilate right. And it seems like some people say, well, I don't really want to put the money in ventilation as to know how much air I'm venting out or how much I'm bringing in and filtering it. Things, you know, that gets into some guys, you say, oh, that's just, you know, rocket science and I don't want to mess with that. Well, if we build the house kind of leaky, now we go back and you let a little bit of moisture inside the walls because you build them a little bit leaky or in the attic. Now you got a nightmare. Like, it's unbelievable how many times on a brand new project I go into an attic to, you know, just to look around, and you'll see the vent fan from the range hood and the bathroom vent fan go just venting into the attic. And they'll blame, well, you know, somebody else is going to take care of it. It's always somebody else's problem. Well, I don't really care who didn't do it right. The person that's going to end up living in the house or the apartment or the townhome, it has to live with your lack of craftsmanship, I guess. And there's a portion of Iowa that when we're doing presentations, we just laugh about it, because there's a portion of Iowa that runs their bathroom vent fans and empties them into 5-gallon buckets in the attic. And they say, well, it'll evaporate. Well, building code says you absolutely cannot put vents in, you know, ventilation fans from inside the house, venting moisture, you cannot put it in your attic. It has to go outside. And they say, well, it's going to evaporate. The moisture is still there.
Right.
And so we'll pull the insulation away in the attic and look down on the top side of your ceiling, and here's all these trails of moisture from condensation. There's beginning of degradation on wood, wood sections, and then in truss attics, we'll see, you know, they're held together by metal plates. We'll start to see corrosion on these metal plates. Well, the metal plates are what's holding your roof together, and it's just because somebody didn't ventilate the moisture out of the house correctly, and we didn't know that back in the 70s. I mean, just willy-nilly just threw it where we didn't want to look at it, I guess.
As a homeowner, the biggest sign that you should follow up on right away is like a musty smell.
Yeah, you know, a musty smell, or you do see some mildew. Look in corners, in closets, the back of closets, because no air, you know, can really get back in there. And you know, in some cases, if you have a basement floor that's a little damp, you know, that you see on all the magazines and that, you know, tape a piece of plastic down. Well, the true test is take something that you really like, put it in a cardboard box, and set the cardboard box down on it. And then
that's not a good test.
That will make you, right. That will absolutely make you fix it when you try to pick the box up and the bottom's sticking to the floor. And, you know, because we're finally understanding that when we use these basements, because that's a valuable square footage, we put carpet down on top of concrete. If there's no insulation underneath the concrete, in many cases, the carpet acts like an insulator. The concrete cools down enough, and now mold grows underneath the carpet. And okay. That's from the carpet industry. You know, that's not just from, you know, Reader's Digest.
All right, we could clearly talk about.
Oh, man, let's go. This is really good.
The terror
one.
Of moisture for
I'll get my
a
mask
time.
Off and we'll really
All
go.
All right, let's talk about foundations now, yes. though, because, of course, the foundation, the thing your home is built upon,
yep.
when things start to go bad, that's a really scary, really expensive problem.
It's very scary, very expensive. You know, and we used to do a lot of concrete block foundations. You know, they're 8 inches by 8 inches by 16 inches long. We did a lot of those in the 70s and 80s because they were fairly inexpensive compared to what we see now as poured concrete walls. And they're very good vertically. You know, when a house is set down on top, they'll hold the house up. But Iowa, we never used to look at lateral pressures, pressure from the side, because our soil expands and contracts, you know, through cold and warm and a lot of moisture and not. And we would start, if once that foundation wall is bent just a little bit from pressure from the outside, it's pretty much done. I mean, now you've got to go back, okay, now how am I going to hold it from getting worse? Because we saw a lot of block foundations fail. They get enough pressure from behind and they'll just, you know, fall in. It was very common. If there's, especially if there's a lot of water in an area, or you're on a hillside, or you've got expansive clays, there's so many things about it. They were fun. I loved laying block foundations. I always got a big kick out of it because, you know, it's kind of a, you lay one down, okay, I don't have to think now because all the rest are the same. You know, you get it level, you're gone.
Like building with Legos.
Yeah, it pretty much is. Yeah, but, you know, 50-pound Legos.
Right.
But we didn't understand that pressure, so they would fail. And there's a lot of businesses now, and a lot of them are very good. Well, they will come in, you know, and stabilize the foundation, try to pull it back. But when you think about it, why didn't we just do the right thing first instead of coming and having somebody else fix it later? That's probably twice what we paid for the foundation to start with. So
what are the early signs here that you should key into to get something taken care of before it becomes completely catastrophic?
If you're down in the basement, look and see if there are any cracks, especially horizontal cracks. And in many cases in Iowa, they will stair step down from the corners. They may start like at the maybe second course down. They're usually 12 courses tall. They'll start to stair step down the joints, and that means something's starting to move. So if it's starting to move, you need to stabilize it now. And putting caulking in it and painting it just to make you feel good, it, you know, is the worst case. And you wouldn't believe how many people got away with that when they would sell a house.
Wow.
Oh, man, look at this basement. It's all painted. I'd go, yeah, there's a reason they painted it. And then you'd put a level or a straight edge against the wall. And if you take a straight edge and you put it on the wall and it kind of bent or kind of, you know, ping, 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 ping. You can bounce it from top and the bottom goes in, the top goes in. You want somebody to come in and stabilize it. There are some easier ways that they will put it like a steel I-beam to brace it up. But once it's starting to go.
Yeah, we've got one of those in our basement.
Yeah, yeah. But once it's starting to go, you know, it wants to start to move, especially a horizontal crack, because those are the scariest ones to me, because that means the whole wall might be moving, and in many cases, one really heavy rain might be enough to do it.
Oh, Bill!
Oh, that's a horrible story.
You are terrifying today. We're talking about the scariest things that can happen to your home and Ooh. How to ward off catastrophe this hour. Our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally, is here today, and you are welcome to join the conversation with your questions. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Luther College, offering more than 60 areas of study, including the new data science and neuroscience majors, dedicated to preparing students for success in a changing world.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally, is here today, and we're talking about household horror this hour, the worst things that can happen to your home and how to ward off catastrophe, what some of the early signs are that you should pick up on if these things are happening to your home. And we've already got Number of people on the phone at 866-780-9100. You are also welcome to join the conversation. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org or tweet us at IPRTalk. Here's an email from Barb in Iowa City. Listening to you talk about cement and mold is freaking me out.
Good.
Yes, I think it was supposed to. I live in a condo built on a cement slab. Is there anything I should be checking out or concerned about? It was built in 2001. I don't see mold on the walls, but I do have sinus problems.
Oh, okay. Well, you know, I would check the closets in the back walls of the closets, right where they meet the floor, or where they meet the ceiling, because in many cases, we think that the moisture is only coming from the bottom, but in a lot of cases, if we don't have enough insulation over the top of the outside wall where the rafters sit on it, we may have some moisture build up in there. And in many cases, you know, people, it's just like allergies. A lot of people have different sensitivities. If you have sinus problems, it may be nothing at all. And it, hopefully that, you know, it probably is, has nothing to do with your house. But some people, just a little bit of even just mildew and mold, just a small amount triggers things, because everybody's different. Because I've been in rooms where, I was saying to you earlier, Charity, there's so much black mold on the walls, you turn the light on and it's like it sucks the light out. I mean, it's completely black. And it doesn't bother me, but a friend of mine, she's a block away, and she starts hacking. You know, it's like everybody's different. But I would check in the corners and down to the bottom of the floor. And then if you have carpet, especially on a slab, and in the early 2000s, we didn't insulate them correctly, especially outside in many cases, the outside of the foundation, lift the carpet up. And if it has a tack strip, that wooden tack strip, if it's wet, then you may want to have somebody come in and take a look at it. And there are ways to take care of that, and most of them are by insulating the outside of the foundation slab, and you can do that afterwards. But it also may be that the ground is way too close to the bottom of the siding, and if it's like less than 8 inches from the bottom of the siding to the ground, there may be enough moisture coming in, and it could have issues inside the wall causing the wood to be wet. Because one of my students called me one time. The ground was right up against the siding on a walkout lower level. And he said, I want to ask you, why is there moisture coming out of the wall about 8 feet up off the floor? And I go, and I have all these answers. Of course, none of them were right. And what it was the bottom of the stud. The studs are the vertical pieces of framing in your walls. The bottom of the stud was sitting on a wet plate, the piece of wood that sat on the concrete. The moisture was going in the plate, and it went up through the stud, because a stud is just a dry piece of tree, and the moisture went right up to the top of the stud, and it hit the other plate at the top, and it stopped and came out of the drywall, 92 5/8 inches up from where the bottom plate was.
Wow.
And that was because moisture coming in the ground. But if she checks under the carpet and in corners, especially in places where behind furniture maybe, and have someone else come in and, you know, and see if they smell it. You know, have a few friends say, hey, do you get a hint of this? And then have a person in your area that does a lot of, say, catastrophe repair. They come in after floods. You know, have somebody come in like that.
Well, and of course, sinus issues could be coming from somewhere else.
Yes, and that's what I mean. And most of the time it is. It's just, you know, something.
It's good to have it looked at.
Could be your yard. I mean, it's just there's a ton of mold in the yard, which is nobody looks at.
All right. Let's go to the phones. Carol is on the line in Ryan. Hi, Carol.
Hi, Charity. Hi. I have a horror story. I bought a home, a 50-year-old home in Dubuque 8 years ago. I had it inspected, and it passed. And about a year later, I decided to make an upgrade in the basement. It was a finished room. It felt kind of damp, but there was no bad odor. And once moisture had come in, so I said, why don't you take the wallboard down and just re-insulate it? So I was in another room, and the contractor came in and said, we have an issue, which is always bad news. And what it was is a large tree about 10 feet from the foundation had sent roots that had buckled the concrete blocks. And the previous owner had built a false wall.
Oh, Yeah.
And hidden it from view on the inside, and on the outside had put a large planter. And because the house had been foreclosed, there was I couldn't go back to the previous owner. So that was an $18,000 horror story.
You know, and I'm glad you mentioned that, because years and years ago when I was just getting started, I had a realtor who's since passed away, so they're clear. They had a foundation system that, you know, had cracked, the blocks had cracked, and they said, I want you to cover that up, build it up, just like your case. And I said, you know, you can find somebody else. There's no way I'm going to do that. It's not ethical. And it that should have all been on the disclosure statement, even on a foreclosure. Boy, I tell you what, I would have really had a hard time having to pay for that myself.
Yeah.
And that's what's bad, is there are unscrupulous people out there. The person that covered it up shouldn't have. And I don't, you know, we don't know, at least I don't, you know, you don't know maybe either, but that is terrible. And that really is a horror story. And that's a lot of money that somebody took from you.
Carol, thank you so much for sharing that. Sorry you had to go through that. Let's go to Dennis in Polk City. Hi, Dennis.
Hi. I have an older home with a hip roof that has a hip roof addition. So if you can imagine a small addition, which is a porch that intersects like a hip roof, sets on it.
Okay.
And what I want to do is I want to take the ceiling out of that room. It's kind of a sunroom, and I want to vault the ceiling. And would I have to frame another hip roof inside of that? What I want to do is I want to prevent moisture. I've changed the soffit, so it's got really good soffit all the way around it. It'll breathe really well, but I don't want to build up moisture. What's my best plan of attack on that?
The best plan of attack is to seal the attic ceiling, you know, the living space. So when you're up on the second, let's say it's a two-story? Is it a two-story?
No, it's a single-story home.
Okay.
It's a single-story home, so the attic place, which would be kind of become sideways to the cantilever, you know, to the raised ceiling, I would have to insulate that, I'm sure. But I'm just concerned about how I frame the ceiling in that room.
Yeah, what we've learned in probably especially in the last 20 years is that we were always ventilating attics, trying to get rid of moisture, and we were never doing a real good job of it, and there was always issues. And then now, especially the codes, especially the energy code, have really dialed in on it, and they want that ceiling airtight. And if it's airtight, moisture can't get into the attic. And if moisture cannot get into the attic, you don't have condensation, or very little. You know, there might be some other issues going on as well. But to make the ceiling airtight, so wherever wires go up through, any lights, anything that goes through that ceiling has to be sealed. So it has to be caulked or foamed shut. And where you have your ventilation in your soffit in an older building, it's very hard to get enough insulation over the top of your outside walls. And let, you know, even though that's hip and it's fairly steep, I'm assuming, but you need to, if you're going to do anything over there, hire someone to bring in closed cell foam and put an attic vent chute, which lets the air come from the soffit into the attic, and then you would have them spray closed cell foam over the top of the wall, the outside wall, and it goes up against that vent chute. And that will give you at least a good chance of stopping air from coming in from the soffit and blowing across your ceiling, which happens a lot too. But you want to air seal it first and then put in, you know, like an R38 to an R49 R value in the attic. And I've always used cellulose because I think it performs a little bit better than blown fiberglass, and that's personal opinion. But but if it's air sealed, then the moisture doesn't get into your attic. And unless there's some leaks along the way, or there's ventilation like a bathroom fan or something putting moisture in your attic. And if you have an attic hatchway that goes up in there or stairs – that has to be airtight as well. Just get on the internet and look at energy efficient hatchways, attic hatchways, and you can pull down some diagrams on how to do that. Plus, if you go to construction instruction, it's an animated, it's a free animated app that shows how to air seal correctly. So it's construction instruction.
Instead of spring foam, this isn't that big of an area. What if I use sheets of foam between the rafters?
Sure, you could.
Down
at the very bottom, sure. But you got to then, but still, you have to either caulk or cans of spray foam, because what you don't want is air coming from the soffit, and it comes in, and we always assume it's just going to go up along the ceiling deck, but in many cases it comes in and then it blows right where the insulation sits on your ceiling, and it blows across and keeps your ceiling cold, and then we've seen condensation there. But what you don't want to do is, you know, you don't want to put like one of those power ventilated vents in your roof, because that in many cases is the worst thing you can do for an attic.
All right. Well, Dennis, good luck with that.
Yep.
Thanks for your call. 866-780-9100 is the number to call with your questions today. You can also email us, talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Jim is on the line next in Adel. Hi, Jim.
Hi, good morning, Bill.
Morning.
I've had a walkout ranch here, and I had to replace the window down here, a fairly large window, about a three-section window. The old window was not leaking, but it was one of them Pro lines and rusted out or rotted out in the middle.
Yeah.
So I replaced it with a good vinyl window. And the old window never leaked, but this one leaks. Now, it leaked one time this year and maybe a couple times last year. And when it leaks, I can be sitting there, it can rain, and all of a sudden, boom, it's like somebody pulled the plug out, and boom, you get some drops about the size of a quarter or 50 cent piece, and that'll be it. Now, I sprayed water all around that new window and found no leaks. I went up higher. I could not get it to leak. I caulked, there's hardy plank, and I caulked in the seams of the hardy plank, and still nothing. I've had the installer out here, and he checked everything, and then I had the manufacturer of the window out here, the service guy, he looked at everything, and I just don't know what to do.
Did there's not a deck up above it, is there?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, it's not directly above it. The deck. Yeah, the deck is a little bit above it, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, in some cases, how long ago was the deck put on, or how old is that attachment?
Oh, about 18 years ago.
Okay, yeah.
I'm looking at the deck now, and the very far edge deck comes about 6 or 8 inches inside that window.
Okay, because, yeah,
so
water...
both windows open.
Yeah, water can run sideways. That attachment, we used to do a very poor job of flashing that ledger board, you know, the board the floor joists hook onto.
Right.
We used to do a really poor job of flashing that, so the flashing now has to be behind that hardy plank, come out over the top of that ledger board, and then let the water go down over the outside of ledger board, and it may be there. But, you know, did they take the siding off and look and make sure that that person put the vinyl window in according to the directions, which almost every, I haven't found one here lately, that on the directions there has to be, you know, a pan, a flexible or a hard plastic pan in the window opening that comes up the sides of the window opening. So when you set the window in, any moisture that gets around the window comes out the outside, and then there's flashing, like a tape-type flashing on the outside of the nail flanges going up the sides, and then the one at the top goes over the ones that came up on the sides. If they didn't put... and I'm trying to stay away from brand name, but I'm just going to say, Tyvek, FlexWrap or something like that. If they didn't put that in, they didn't follow the directions. If they just use caulking, that's not following the directions. Caulking's not going to hold water out. It's just going to hold it for a little bit, and then you get to a certain amount, and it can't hold it anymore, like a little dam, and then you'll get that catastrophic big drops like you have because it's pooling up somewhere. And
yeah,
any siding, hardy, wood siding, vinyl, none of them hold water out. I mean, it just, the water will get to the back side of it, and then it drains down between the siding and the sheeting or the Tyvek or house wrap, whatever you have on the outside. So there's something missing in that flashing. Even if that deck is having a problem, if that flashing was put on correctly on the window, if it was installed correctly to the directions, then you shouldn't have water. I mean, you should be able to just sit over the top of that thing with a fire hose, and there shouldn't be any water coming in if the flashing was put on correctly. So if it was me, I would pull that hardy off if you can, you know, and it's, I know it's tough. But if you can get and see if that flashing was put on, in some cases you can pull the trim off on the inside and you can peek, and you might be able to see it. But I would ask them, hey, did you know? I'd get the directions, and because usually it's on the first or second page of the directions, it shows how to put that window in correctly with the flashing tape, and that is a national standard. So a lot of people still don't do that; they don't read directions. Just to, a couple months ago, I kind of got into it with somebody that had been building for years, and I went in and I said, I can't believe it. And he goes, well, this is the way we've always done our windows. And well, I tell you what, in the last 15 years, we've been putting them in wrong. Here's page two. That's why they put this on the, you know, the paper. They didn't want to waste the ink. They actually put it there on the paper so you'd follow them. So I'd take a look at that. That's
right.
That's somehow that it shouldn't be leaking. There's
but
no
you
excuse.
You feel like he's going to need to look at it himself to have an argument here.
Or a third party.
Okay.
Yeah, you're going to have to bring somebody that's got no skin in the game.
All right. Jim, good luck with that. Thanks a lot for your call. We're going to take a short break here. We'll be back to talk about household horror in a moment. We've got a lot of emails, a lot of phone calls. You are welcome to join the conversation. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally, is on the case today. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about household horror, the stuff that goes wrong that's really hard or really expensive to fix, or both.
You know, between Jim and my coffee, I'm all wound up now.
Yeah,
so we need...
I know. I don't think you're going to get any good stories this hour.
No.
Our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally, is here today. Let's hit a couple of emails here, and you're welcome to join us, Talk of Iowa, at iowapublicradio.org, 866-780-9100. This is from Mary. She says, what about cracks in the floor of the foundation? We've had water seep through. How can this be addressed? Also, how do you insulate a basement floor before putting carpet down?
Well, you know, concrete's always going to crack. And in many cases, you know, it might have been a really hot day and it cracked. Cracks, in, you know, unless they're just all over the place, a few cracks in the basement floor don't bother me a bit. But, you know, with the radon that we have in Iowa and moisture issues, you know, if she has moisture coming up, first thing I do is I put in a sump pump. Hopefully she's on soil that will allow the water to flow, you know, over to the sump pit and the sump pump. And that may take care of everything. And then she can go ahead and do a radon test and then you know, have a system put in if she needs to. The basement floor, she has to take care of that before she insulates the floor. So until that moisture thing's taken care of, don't even think about doing anything in the basement. And one thing that's always scared me, and I have a couple of friends that agree with me, but when the people will buy those 2-foot by 2-foot tiles, wood and platon, which is like a, you know, plastic dimples on the bottom of it, they'll set it over the floor, and then they'll put their carpet over the top of that. But they didn't take care of the moisture. Now they don't see it, so they think, okay, well, I can...
Everything's fine.
Yeah, well, it's up on little legs. Well, you know, if you'd have done it right the first time, you wouldn't have to, you know, put that in. But what scares me is, you know, common sense tells you, you've got, it's dark underneath there. Now it's cold or it's warm, and you've got moisture. Now what's growing underneath that? And somehow it's going to get out
somewhere.
And
you're just not a big fan of of carpet in the basement, period, are
no,
you?
No, I'm not. I'm not at all. If you put sheets of foam, you know, 1 to 2 inches of foam underneath that concrete slab, fine. Go ahead and carpet. But University of Minnesota and the carpet industry, on the tests that they did back in the 90s, it still holds true. If you do not put insulation underneath that basement slab, it has nothing to do with moisture in the ground, strictly temperature. If there's no insulation underneath the basement slab, they said paint it or ceramic tile. Other than that, don't do anything.
So tile it and put down some throw rugs.
Yeah.
But
if you want to insulate later, you know, I would look up. There's so many different ways, but most of them will put, like, say, an inch of foam over the top of the concrete, and then you'll put plywood over the top, you know, to put your carpet on. But they never, you know, they have this whole article about how to do it, make it look good and everything, but they never address what about the basement steps. You're coming down 13 or 14 or 15 steps at 7 inches, and then you come down, and your last step now is 2.5 inches shorter. And the first thing the person is going to do is jam their knee, trip, fall, break a hip. I mean, they don't look at the whole picture, and that's just always been a pet peeve of mine, is they don't look at the steps. So there's so many other things other than just keeping that floor, you know, insulated. So just put down ceramic tile or throw rugs.
All right.
Just, yeah.
Ooh, you are worked up.
Boy.
Okay, this one's from Lee in West Des Moines. My house was built in 1963 and has three of the small original windows up near the ceiling. During a heavy rain, we determined that the caulking had deteriorated, and so that was fixed from the inside. We'd like to replace them, but one is under our deck. Can that be done from the inside, and would glass block be a good choice?
Glass block are a real good choice, but caulking from the inside, remember, it's like putting your finger in you know, the little kid in Holland or whatever, put his finger in the dam. You want to stop the water from the outside. Even though it's underneath the deck, you should be able to get access to it. And glass block are really good. There's other systems. There's windows you can put in. But glass block are really nice because they have some insulated value. They let light in. And you don't have to mess with them once they're put in, if they're put in correctly. Usually the key to the glass block is where the glass block, they'll fill up an opening 16 inches tall, 32 inches wide. That's kind of standard in the 60s. Is on the outside of the glass block, there should be a little bit of a lip of concrete or cement that sheds the water. So there's a little bit of an angle on the outside of the glass block that sheds the water away. If that isn't done, then you may still have some moisture issues. But a good mason, a bricklayer or a very good remodeler can put those in. And they are really nice. They've got so many different designs now. And so that'd be the best thing for
them. All right. Here's an email from Brandon, who is further along in the basement process. We're looking at finishing our basement come spring. I put in a sump pump this spring and made sure it stayed dry all year. It's a poured foundation, and the walls are chipping and falling apart. I think it's just superficial. Is it okay to put a rubberized coat of paint to hold it all together and then frame up walls and sheetrock over it?
Well, you know, that without seeing it, you kind of wonder why it's chipping. Hopefully it's dry. In some cases, it just was maybe weakened when it was poured. They might have had extra, you know, maybe poured it in cold, and there was a higher salt mix, you know, salt content in it. There's other things. But if there's no cracks, it's probably just cosmetic. And it may be just the little patches where they broke off the spacer bars that went through to hold the forms. It's really recommended in many cases, especially in Iowa, that if you're going to finish off the basement, put 2 inches of styrofoam, not the white stuff, but blue, pink, and extruded type of foam. Put that against the concrete, and then go ahead and frame and wire and insulate if you want to add additional. In many states, you can't just put insulation against concrete, because there again it goes back to when we would have maybe some moisture. And whatever you do, do not use plastic vapor barrier in the basement. We used to do that all the time, and that again caused us to have moisture in the walls. So you would just use, if you use fiberglass, use friction fit bats, not with the vapor barrier, with the paper on the face of it. But that, you know, somebody can come in and spray closed cell foam against the wall and then frame it. But you should have at least an R10, an R5, an R10 on there before you start framing.
All right. Let's go back to the phone. Sarah is in Algona. Hi, Sarah.
Yes, hi.
Hi.
I bought a home that was built in the late 1800s, and the walls are big stone.
Yep.
And we were thinking about refinishing part of that and leaving those two of the walls as the exposed stone.
Okay.
Is there a product that we can just, you know, put over that to seal it, or should we just leave that natural?
You know, it's I did a law office years and years ago that had a building that had the stone. It was from the late 1800s, had a stone foundation. And, you know, most of the time it's like a limestone. Is it when you're down there, are the joints kind of powdery and you see kind of the effervescence on it some every once in a while if there's a little?
Yes.
Okay. We've tried sealing and it just doesn't stick because everything's so porous and the moisture comes from the outside and takes it off. There may be something. I don't know what it is. I don't know how it's going to stick to it permanently because, you know, it is always going to kind of flake off. If you want to cover it, though, there's a product called Keen Drywall. It's K-E-E-N-E, drywall spelled D-R-I-W-A-L-L. And it's used on commercial products or projects and Department of Energy and EPA. They've got some projects. So they show pictures of it. What it is, it's kind of a mat of kind of woven plastic, and you just kind of drape it over the top of the stone, and then someone will come in and spray closed cell foam over the top of it, and then the water, when it does come through, or if it doesn't, that's fine, but it can drain through the mat and it comes out on the floor, which in an old house like that, it's something you're going to, you know, expect. It's really hard to hold moisture out of an old foundation. And you just have to direct it somewhere when it does come through. But I've never seen anything that really sticks to stone that is powdery and is always going to be powdery. But it looks cool. I mean, we brushed it and everything, and then the next year, okay, now it looks just like it did before we brushed it. Yeah, I feel bad for you because it looks cool. I mean, I really like the look of it too.
And, okay, great.
You may just have to live with it.
Yeah, we were going to tile the floor anyway, so it sounds like that's an 8. Avenue.
Yeah, there you go. Yep.
All right, Sarah, thanks a lot for your call. Tom is up next in Des Moines. Hi, Tom.
Hi, Charity. I guess I've got kind of another horror story, too. I bought a house a couple years ago, and I don't know what was up with me, but I didn't see some things, and the inspector didn't see them either. And I got a living room that is an addition, and it had a little strip of... what is it, wallpaper around the edge of the ceiling, and I should have thought something about that, but I took that off because I didn't like the wallpaper, and I've got, like, damage in one of the walls. It looks like water damage, possibly a little black mold.
Okay.
I haven't had any breathing issues with it, but it's ugly and needs repaired, and I got hold of some people to repair it, and they said, well, you should fix the roof first, and I went and put a whole new roof on because the guy told me it wouldn't last very long if I just repaired it. So now how expensive is that going to be to fix that drywall?
In many cases, it isn't very expensive. Have somebody come in that is a good drywaller. And
okay.
How old is the house?
It's built in 61.
Okay, yeah. Here's a case, again, kind of like an earlier caller, is we didn't have enough insulation over the top of the walls, and so in some cases it would be so cold right there, especially if the humidity was high inside the house, if somebody kept it elevated at all, then that would be the place where it would condense, is right there where the wall and the ceiling meet. And if there's wallpaper, that's a perfect breeding ground for mold spores. And I'm not going to say mold because I got to train myself to quit saying mold. I have to say biologicals. I was advised to say that. So it's a biological of some sort that's causing that stain up there, but it's from condensation. So what someone can do is have them or a carpenter go up in the attic and put some insulation, you know, even a sheet board over the top of where the wall and the ceiling meet, and try to put as much insulation as you can over the top of that wall. That will help, hopefully, some. It may have some other issues, but that's a good starting point. And they can patch that drywall. And in some cases, if they can't match the texture the way you want, is forget the wallpaper and just put a nice, and I hate, and it sounds like you're cobbling it up, but if you can just put a nice trim board around the top, you know, like you, okay. you do, or you know, or a crown mold. And if you ever have issues again, you can take that off and you can see if it, what's causing the issues. But someone needs to get in the attic and see if there's enough insulation where the two meet, because that gets really cold. And like I say, you get condensation. And that's probably what caused the biological issue was the glue in the wallpaper. You know, I mean, it didn't cause it, but it was, a symptom of it. So, you know.
I have one other really quick question.
Sure.
The addition stays really cold. How hard is it? Is it expensive to come in after the fact and re-insulate that? Because it just stays really cold in there all the time.
Yeah, somebody didn't do it right. And, I'm one that if the inspector was licensed, you might want to ask them if they had an infrared camera when they inspected it, because they should have been able to look at it. But sometimes a year it doesn't work that well. You can buy an infrared camera for your cell phone for about $250. From a company called Seek, S-E-E-K, or FLIR, F-L-I-R, or someone might have one. But if you're going to put new siding, you insulate on the outside. If you're going to insulate in the inside, it could be an issue. But it could also be poor ductwork design. This person that put the ductwork in may have not designed it correctly to get enough warm air to that addition, or they didn't insulate below this addition correctly. So there could be a lot of things. I just maybe have someone a construction person you trust come over and take a look at it and crawl underneath and up above.
Well, Tom, thanks a lot for your call. Next up, Laura in Iowa City. Hi, Laura.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I live in a prefab kit house that was built after World War II in 1944. The house wall panels consist of a concrete material and tend to get cold during the winter months. The house siding and the wall insulation were replaced in 1998, and the insulation was placed on the exterior of the walls. A few of the walls still get very cold during the winter months. Can I place foam insulation over the surface of the interior walls to reduce the coldness and keep the house warmer?
Yeah, you can.
Okay.
You want somebody that understands moisture a little bit too,
okay.
Because that type of house, in some cases, you may, I don't know how it's attached or if there may be moisture coming up as well. But I helped a buddy of mine. He had a solid brick house, and we insulated the complete inside with 2 inches of foam. And, the nice thing is when you add insulation on the inside, it makes the trim work shorter. So we were able to reuse all the trim work. The only issue was the windows. We had to add a little bit of an extension jam on the windows for the trim work. But yes, you can do that. You would want, are you in a community that has a building inspector?
Yes, I am.
Okay, bring them out and run them through it, because there may be some electrical issues or something that they may personally want you to do. So check with, get your inspector involved right from the very beginning, so that they're a very good resource in many cases.
All right, Laura, thank you so much for your call. We're going to squeeze in hopefully a short question. This is from David in Hiawatha. We have ceiling corner mold. Who's certified to repair this work, and how do we find a trustworthy attic professional?
Oh, boy, that's great.
You got 30 seconds.
Oh, man, that's tough. Well, when it comes to trustworthy, you've got to kind of sometimes go by your gut and get a lot of recommendations from people. I would do a lot of research right now. I would look at, like I said, construction instruction is one, and just Google attic to ceiling, attic to wall connections, moisture. and you will pull up a lot of things. And that music is great. So, yeah, you're going to have to do some research because finding someone that knows how to do it sometimes is very hard.
All right.
I would check with maybe Iowa State or the Center on Sustainable Communities.
All right. Bill McAnally, okay. Thank you so much for scaring the bejunior out of us
today.
That
is my job at Halloween.
All right. Bill McAnally, our home improvement expert. Talk of Iowa is produced by Iowa Public Radio.